Hi, I'm Alex Wagner. I do not need to tell you that being an American right now is a wild ride. But as a longtime journalist, I am not interested in the noise or the fear-mongering. I'm interested in the stories at the heart of the headlines. That is why every week on my show, Runaway Country, I'm joined by folks in the middle of the crossfire. From disillusioned MAHA moms to newly fired immigration judges to Epstein victims themselves, to understand what it means to live through this political chaos as an actual human being. And now I'm excited to tell you that Runaway Country is available ad-free to Friends of the Pod subscribers. Friends of the Pod is the subscription that supports the work Crooked does as an independent media company and gives you a ton of great bonus and ad-free content. With the midterms approaching, you are going to need more content to keep you sane. And now you can find Runaway Country right there. Subscribe now at crooked.com/friends. Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan.
And I'm Akilah Hughes.
Akilah! Akilah's here, our favorite writer, comedian, and internet person. Our favorite of all of those things combined
Thank you so
into
much.
One. We're so happy to have you back guest hosting while Alyssa is on vacation. So I have a question, Akilah. On a scale ranging from 1 to buying 24 packs of Bud Light in order to destroy them on camera, how big is the MAGA freakout going to be when Melania, the film, is snubbed by the Academy Awards next year?
I think it's going to be like the sequel to January 6th. I think they're storming the stage like Will Smith.
Do you think that they're going to like try to get to the Dolby and realize that traffic is way worse than they thought and they're all just going to be stuck in traffic or like accidentally in the wrong part of town?
Oh, totally. I mean that, or they're going to have to do counter-programming like they planned for the Super Bowl, where they're just like, these are movies we liked, and it's going to be like Air Bud 17 and Melania.
It'll be like Daily Wire Studios productions, like that movie.
Exactly.
That like massive Game of Thrones-like movie series that they're making that
allegedly
has Brett Cooper in it as like an Arthurian heroine.
Yeah,
anyway,
yeah, yeah. Starring Ben Shapiro.
Who can't miss it. Can't miss it. Today, we are digging so deep into the latest Epstein files drop that we got the Bens coming back out. In Minneapolis, Red Yarn is selling out because they're knitting Norwegian resistance hats. At my local yarn store, it's because I need the red string to make my giant Epstein connection board. And then we're going to get into the circuses part of Bread and Circuses. We're going to talk about award shows. We're talking about the Olympics. We're talking about all of these things that used to be distractions from the bad stuff. Will they still be distractions? Will the participants in those distractions feel the need to speak out? How is that going to play out? Then, of course, we wrap things up with Sanity Corner and I Feel Petty. Okay, let's get into it. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast by and for people who always did the most work on group projects, who have now found themselves doing a group project together. The most horrible group project that I have ever done, that you have ever done. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Akilah, I just want to give our listeners a little under the hood. We had our production call on Monday, and when Akilah gets on the production call, can you walk our listeners through your
yes.
vibe on that call and your vibe continuing into today?
I mean, I think I'm just on a tear. I absolutely kicked the door in just to tell everyone that I've been up for days reading these Epstein files, searching terms, coming up with my own conspiracies and then solving them. And like just all of the information being so just such an overload and so upsetting. I was like, there's no way we're not talking about this. And ultimately, I think it's going to be a big Epstein episode.
It just keeps growing. This Epstein follow keeps growing. So on Friday, the DOJ dumped its largest set of Epstein files yet. It was 3 million pages, 180,000 images, 2,000 videos. There were some like sound clips. This is 6 weeks past the deadline from all of them to be released to the public. And this is still just a fraction of what has what is in that entire set of documents. Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche said this release marks the end of a very comprehensive document identification and review process to ensure transparency to the American people and compliance. But Democrats continue to argue that too many documents have been withheld without proper justification. And after review and redactions, the DOJ has withheld about 2.5 million of the 6 million potentially responsive pages it identified. As of now, the files the DOJ has released are available and searchable on the department's website. And both Akilah and I have gotten incredibly deep into them. And yes, as Akilah said, our sleep has suffered. I also want to say, I want to hone in on this Todd Blanche statement at first, where he's like, oh yeah, we've been working so hard. We've done a really thorough job of was that your impression going through the files, that people, human beings had been working hard and a thorough job was done on them?
Girl, no, not at all. It is very haphazard. Something that you and I noted in that production meeting is the fact that when you're searching through just by terms, you can see, you know, a page or an email where there are redactions, but then see the same email where everything is still clear and apparent. Mm-hmm. I found that, like, the number of duplicates just slows down what I consider my own investigation. And I also think that, like, you know, withholding 2.5 million leaves out a huge chunk of, like, seeing the bigger picture. Like, even the things that we're filling in are, like, coming with more and more cracks. So I just felt like, you know, this is another sort of rinky-dink job by people who are unqualified to lead the country, especially when it comes to justice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, how about you?
I mean, it was so sloppy. It was so sloppy. 404 Media and the New York Times over the weekend reported that there were unredacted photos of naked bodies in sexual poses, some of which could well have been minors, considering, yeah, you know, and they, you know, alerted the Justice Department. I know 404 Media alerted the Justice Department, and it took the Justice Department like a full day after they were alerted to take the images down. So, like, yeah, the haphazardness continues apace, like, into mm-hmm. the documents being out there and released. The duplicates thing is so frustrating because some of them have formatting issues and some don't. So right. Something I saw circulating a lot, we'll get more granular in a second, but something I've seen circulating is somebody talking about meeting a cute Brazilian who is 9 years old. Have you seen this email?
No, God.
But it's a formatting issue. Like, that sounds completely believable given the monstrousness of right. Epstein and the men who thought it was cool to hang out with him and cozy up to him. But you know how some of the emails had, like, equal signs randomly yeah. inserted?
All throughout.
In place of different characters. So there is a different version of the email that shows that the number was actually 19. So, got like, it. So some of this is just the Justice Department making it worse for themselves. Because, like, yeah. why is an email out that has a formatting error that makes it appear that somebody was sexually trafficking a 9-year-old girl? And also right. not redacting it's so sloppy and haphazard and strange. But, like, broad strokes, like, without having to identify details and parse through individual things. Yeah. What are your big takeaways from what you have learned?
Well, I think that, like, what is just very shocking to me is that after being convicted, you know, in the early 2000s, just how many people didn't seem to care and were, like, conversing with him so regularly. Mm-hmm. And maybe to this day haven't distanced themselves or have, like, lied about that. Like, they have just been like, oh, I don't talk to him at all once I found that out. And then it's like every year they're in his inbox, like, what's going
they're
on?
Like, Merry Christmas.
Right.
Merry Christmas.
Exactly.
Do you have my ornament from last year?
Right. And so it's just like, I think the absolute breadth of how corrupt all of this is. I also think, like, I mean, I know we're, like, not going to get too granular, but just sort of seeing how it touches globally so many problems, like governmental issues, financial issues, sex trafficking issues, all of the, and, like, just the number of people who are billionaires who are listed in this. It's like, this is the ruling class. And I think that they're frankly disgusting and pathetic and have a lot to answer for. So, like, that has been, I think, the overarching cloud of me reading all of this crap. The other thing I'll say is just, like, how stunted Jeffrey Epstein as a person was. Like, mm-hmm. the way he conversed with these young girls and young women who he had, you know, outsized power over because of his, you know, financial situation, the way he sort of, like, groomed them and would shame them and talk about how his feelings were hurt when, like, this is a man who's not in relationship with these people. This is a man who is, like, literally trafficking them. it just goes to show that, like, I don't know. I think that this is like, this is an issue that I think has had me like looking sideways at a lot of these like heads of state and people where I'm like, oh, you all are children. You all are like idiots. You are bad people.
Yeah. I think that my big broad strokes takeaway from this is that men are bad.
Well, they're not
males
being that
allegation. Of the human species, and I say this like my husband's a man. I've known several men who have not, but like I'm just like I'm raising two girls, and I'm like, do I put them out into the world and tell them to just assume that men are bad until they prove otherwise? And I'm sort of like, that seems like a little bit of a paranoid take. And it comes from the fact that for many years in my career, I was reporting on issues having to do with men victimizing women, men dehumanizing women, and women's struggle to be seen as human beings in a world that's constantly subjugating them. So I get that I have my own bias. But reading these files, I'm like, I think I just need to tell them to not talk to men at all. Just assume that they are bad and just not, because it seems that all of these people are either they are already on Epstein's side where they're like, hell yeah, like skinny little girls, like either they're already like that or they're so weak and so dazzled by the prospect of hanging out with a person who has sold himself to the world as a financial genius, who has access to billions of dollars. They're so dazzled by access that they're willing to completely toss their morality aside or any sense of morality, empathy, anything. They don't care. It all goes down the drain. But my opinion about Jeffrey Epstein is that he seems stupid. He seems like an idiot. There's a recording of him talking to former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak, and he is trying to tell him about Palantir. Have you heard it?
Yes.
And very confidently, Palantir, which is a thing in a book. So if you've read the books, you know, if you're familiar with J.R.R. Tolkien, you would know how to spell Palantir because you would have seen it printed many, many times.
At least once.
At least once, right.
If you skimmed.
Right. You would have registered. Anyway, he's on the phone and he's like, P-A-L-L-E-N-T-I-E-R, Palantir. And he says it in such a like a pageant confidence where he's like, nobody's ever been like, nope, that's wrong, Jeffrey. You spelled it wrong. You can't spell.
Yes.
He seems like an idiot. And it is kind of interesting to me that somebody who appears that illiterate over like email would be trusted as a genius. If I were like a Harvard professor trying to secure some funding and they're like, he's like this financial genius. He's an investment genius. And I got an email from him and he was like spelling shit in all low case and not. I would just be like
missing words. Just like it reads absolutely bananas. And it's like, but you know what that also makes me think is like, oh, this is so much about the financial aspect of it. And like, obviously his finances are murky. Like, I mean, something else I'll note is just that like he seemed very cheap for someone who has billions of dollars. Like this is the way he would like, you know, split hairs about an Adobe membership for one of his girls that he was like grooming who wanted to better herself and like learn how to do like have a skill. He's like, I don't want to pay $600 for your Photoshop class. And I'm like, I thought you were a billionaire. Like you're a moron. But I think that like Donald Trump is someone who I think reads as rich and now has like ransacked the government. And people gave him the benefit of the doubt for decades because they were like, well, he must be smart. He has money. And it's like, I'm not seeing the correlation.
Yeah. Reading some of the emails that I picked out, I'm also starting to think differently about Elon and Donald's relationship. Like it is very, when it first came out that they were close, I was like, well, it seems like they were maybe like vacation friends, you know, and they had a closeness before one of them realized that they just didn't really get along or have that much in common. And, you know, and then they had a falling out. But the more I read about it, I mean, and that was like at the very beginning. So I was like, there was no evidence that they were best friends. Now I'm like, they had a Glinda Alphaba situation. They were absolute best friends. And now like at the very end of it, you know, we have Donald tossing the torch on the Epstein effigy and no one mourns the wicked is playing. And it's like, they're like, is that what's going on? Are they working in cahoots with each other?
Is it all just a conspiracy of like rich men working in cahoots to like, you know, put out one story so they can clear their own name?
Yeah, it feels really wild. I mean, let's get into some of the topics that you and I both drilled down on. But the first is Elon Musk, I don't know why he was tweeting that he'd never gone to the island when he knew that all of his emails were in possession of the feds. Like, right. What did you think was going to happen? What did you find out about Elon Musk?
Well, I think like everyone else, like I've always thought that Elon was pretty pathetic, just like publicly. But the idea that on Christmas Day in 2012, you're like, hey, Jeffrey, when's the big party? I'd love to party with you guys. And like Jeffrey is even like trying to be like, oh, I'm sorry, it's party's a little packed. You can't come. I'm like, wow, you're such a loser that like even the pedophiles are like, I'm good. I don't want to see this guy. But also I think just like how deep of a liar he is, like how gullible he hopes the like masses are, because, you know, he was like, I'm not really in these files. And I turned him down. And then the response to, you know, this information coming out, you know, him on X saying essentially that he could do it himself if he wanted to. As if that's like a great response. Like, okay, you could have a pedophile island if that was what you wanted. I don't think that's the, like, it's not a great defense. Yeah. You're a loser, Elon.
Yeah, didn't he? He also had like multiple kids at that point, right? And yes. Elon mm-hmm. has been one of these pronatalist people. He's just kind of like this creepy insect going around like laying his eggs places. Yes. And like whatever model of fatherhood he was embodying was just a real shitty one. On Christmas morning, you're like, yeah. Hey, when can I come down to your sex island and like, like it, annoy everybody at your big party? It's very odd. There was also a CBS contributor who did this sort of like Grandpa Simpson coming into the Maison Derrière and then immediately seeing yes. Bart and pivoting around and leaving.
Yes.
Peter Attia, who is I don't know very much about him. He's a wellness expert, I guess, a doctor.
So that's that's the thing. Apparently not really a doctor. That's yeah. coming out this week. So
yeah, he's a, well, what is
he's
doctor
an MD
mean?
On Twitter.
Yeah.
Rough.
But he's like one of those kind of freaks who's obsessed with longevity and has written a lot of books and has been on a lot of like well-lit TV interviews, and he was supposed to be a contributor to CBS News, but then it turned out Barry Weiss is CBS News. Hard to believe that Barry Weiss, as a with all of her brilliant experience running a newsroom, would make a mistake this bad.
But she's also fighting tooth and nail to keep him there.
She's so
according to reports.
She dumb too. She's not in the Epstein files, but I'm like, this bitch is so dumb.
Her wife is.
Yeah, yeah.
Not great.
Yeah, but anyway, this guy, Attia, was flagged in the Epstein files. There's an anecdote from his book, which was a bestseller, where he talks about how his newborn son got very sick and his wife was begging him to come home, but he had business to attend to in New York. This dump reveals that the business was hanging out with Jeffrey Epstein. Divorce!
Exactly, divorce, and then, like, you know, we got to go to The Hague. Like, I just think it's absolutely outrageous.
Divorce. You know, an anecdote about true crime that I like that sticks in my head is that when the BTK killer was apprehended due to genetic evidence, when he was apprehended and arrested, and it was like, yep, he's been the one going around, going into people's houses and torturing and killing people, his wife was granted an immediate divorce.
Yes.
And I feel like there should be a similar thing for people whose husbands are revealed to be shitheads by, like, criminal immediate divorce.
Yes,
immediate. You should be
there.
Able to
divorce,
get like babes. a stamp on your hand that's like blacklight reactive, and it's like you're officially divorced. We saw some Naomi Campbell in the files.
Yeah. I mean just nonstop. And honestly, like, from what I could see, you know, I didn't read everything. There are a lot of listings. It's a lot of just like clearly being friends with him to the point where, like, she's clearly been involved. Like, mm-hmm. All I can say is, like, there was one file where she's just talking about how she hurt her leg, so she has to miss a party, and she's going to Vail to get a massage. And I'm like, this is, you don't see a lot of people in the files being like, and you are my friend, so here is my schedule. It's a lot of people sort of like having a transactional relationship with him, being like, when can I get something? When can I get money? Who do you know? But weirdly with her, I'm like, that just seems like she was really maintaining that relationship in a way that I don't know. I mean, she was involved with that Blood Diamonds case years ago.
Oh,
so
my
I've
God,
always been
yeah.
like side-eyeing her. And I'm like, yeah, I think she might just be a villain.
She is a villain. She's the kind of villain that has used her beauty to cozy up to men and completely perpetuate the systems that oppress people who are less stunning than she is, and less stunning and less cruel than she is.
Totally.
And like it is another a thing that I was thinking as I read this is I always thought in the early 2000s that like Victoria's Secret, the whole vibe of Victoria's Secret was like a brothel. Like they were selling the idea, like the catalog and the fashion show and the way the ads were shot. It just looked like a bunch of women that had been imported to some guy's island that were like pillow fighting. And like it just, there was something very like sex trade-y about it. And I always thought that about like pageants. It always felt like
majorly
being
like,
in a
why
county.
Are we putting blush on a 3-year-old?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
who
yeah.
is it for? What are
yeah.
we doing?
Yeah.
And like, what are we selling here? Like,
yes, yeah.
I think 3-year-olds are cute enough on their own. I don't think we need to put big fake eyelashes and like small dresses on them. I think they're leave them alone.
Yeah, or do like adult type dances that are not necessarily sexual, but just like adult type mannerisms. Where
right, and also like the entire audience is adults. Like it's not like, oh, and then kids come to perform for kids. It's not like a school play. It's like, no, this is just a bunch of adults being like, that one's the cutest. Ew.
Yeah, it's super weird. The entire pageant pipeline. And it's like pageants, modeling, all of it.
Oh my
all
gosh,
of it.
The modeling.
I all mean, like, of it is sex trafficking.
The heads of all of the like modeling agencies abroad who were implicated and like, you know, rightfully fired when I think it came out the first time, but like actually wild for them to be like, and I'm sending you 5 girls and these are just young girls who are like, I'm getting my big modeling break. And it's like, actually, you have to go live on an island with like a creep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or horrible. Live in an apartment with like 10 different girls in New York City. And the only way that you eat is if a man gives you money because you're not getting paid enough for modeling jobs to really like make rent or eat. But you can be a rich man's company for the evening or for a week or for a weekend.
Yes.
And that's how you make rent. And then maybe you can move into your own apartment or maybe you can move into his apartment. And I just think, I mean, this is totally unrelated to the Melania movie coming out. But there it does seem like there are so many connections between Epstein and the modeling industry. And I don't know if it's possible to tease out modeling from sex trafficking. It does.
Right.
It seems like it's one and the same. And the models that are really the most successful models maybe escape without having to, you know, be somebody's nephew's date to a wedding in Dubai or whatever. But like, it just feels
a lot
like,
of them don't have that. I mean, it's very clear. And like, to your point about that, there's a lot of emails that are about like Jeffrey Epstein being angry that a girl would be like, I'm trying to work today, like a regular job. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you don't get to work. Like, you're supposed to be like just around, like a beck and call girl. And it's, I think, really, it's just, it's so upsetting because especially that young, you can only imagine how hard it is to be broke and in a country that is not, like, you know no one, and the only person you know is, like, sex trafficking you. Like, I just have a lot of, I think, sympathy for those young girls. It's just really, it's just egregious. Like, that's the thing. It's like, there's 3 million new files, and it's just filled with, like, this shit.
Yeah. It's filled with this shit, and it's filled with, like, a complete disregard for their humanity. The government itself did a terrible job of redacting things. An attorney for one of the girls whose identity was not retracted, is like, we should take all these files down. They did such a bad job protecting people. I guess there was, like, a full-on list of some of the girls that were trafficked, and it's like, it's horrifying. The government doesn't care. Epstein didn't care. The guys that were in his orbit didn't care. And even the women that were in his orbit didn't care. It was much more men than women. But the women that were close to him, I'm almost like angrier at because I hold like here's an example. Eva Anderson Dubin. She's a former Miss Sweden who has gone on to be a very accomplished physician. When she was young, she dated Epstein in the early 80s. They dated and they stayed in touch. They were like good pals. There's a lot of text messages between the two of them. And the text messages occurred in many cases like after his conviction and having to register as a sex offender. It's really it's really upset. They joke around about her curing breast cancer, and Jeffrey makes a joke, like a crude joke, about how he would be like the, I don't know, I bet, like, he seems like the kind of guy who would have, like, a female body inspector, FBI shirt.
Right. Oh, 1,000,000%.
And, like yeah.
Horrible.
It's really weird and gross. Something weird that I found. So we're talking about kind of, this is, like, two-pronged. It's like, the people that were okay with what Jeffrey Epstein was doing, the people that cozied up to Epstein. But then Epstein, the person, is something that we don't really know a ton about, despite the fact that he's kind of all over the place. But I am a glutton for punishment, and I made the mistake of searching for the word fertility in the files. And the reason I did that is because when I was writing my This Fucking Guy script on Ghislaine Maxwell, I found a couple like weird details that talked about her receiving fertility treatments, like her doing an IVF thing and Jeffrey had to do his part or something like that. And I was just like, that's really odd. He doesn't have any children, despite the fact that this, you know, or that we know of, you know. And we've heard there was one victim or one survivor of Epstein who said that he had a weird penis, like his genitals were strange, and there have been rumors about that. So I was like, it seems like he had something going on with like fertility. And I found records of him freezing his sperm. There was like sperm storage receipts. At first I thought he was donating it, but then I kind of like went further into the emails and I was like, oof, thank goodness, because they should not be letting that guy.
Right. Also, like, imagine the kid who just like has to admit one day, like, so my dad was
Jeffrey Epstein.
It's like, I'm sorry, kid. Sorry.
Yeah. I also found this, and it's very strange, and I'm not sure what it means. So I'm just going to like pull up what I found, because it was like super weird. So I found a letter from Weill Cornell Medicine at New York Presbyterian, dated April 19th, 2019, which is weird, because when did Jeffrey Epstein die? Oh, August 10th. That was a few months before he died.
Yeah.
And it was an email to him that said that his doctor, Darius Paduke, had stopped seeing patients. He was a urologist. He doesn't have a site for ongoing patient care. No details about Darius Paduke here. And then there's a list of doctors that they recommend for him to replace his care. And the doctors are like sexual medicine, Klinefelter syndrome, and male reproductive treatment. Why is Klinefelter syndrome being singled out in this letter to him about his ongoing medical care? So Klinefelter syndrome is a chromosomal abnormality where somebody with an XY chromosome combination is born with an extra X chromosome or two or three. Mm-hmm. So usually you just get one, you get an X from your mom and you get either an X or a Y from your dad. And if you know, people can have XYY, XXX, whatever, but then those combinations present their own complications. Klinefelter syndrome is like a fairly common genetic abnormality in terms, you know, as far as the chromosomal abnormalities go. But they cause, among other things, like genital malformation in the males that have it. So that was something I saw. And then the second thing I found when I was like, who is Darius Paduke and why was he stopped from seeing patients? I found on the U.S. Department of Justice website from November 20th, 2024, that he had just been, he was convicted. He was sentenced to life in prison by Judge Ronnie Abrams for years-long sexual abuse of patients, some of whom were minors. So he was a...
So, of course, he's like, I'm a pedophile and doctor.
Yeah.
Because, like, I guess if you're a pedophile, you have to, like, only see other pedophiles regardless of their profession. Like, what the hell?
Exactly. They can all go to the pedophile island, and now the pedophile island has a urologist. But it was like, okay. Wow, what are the odds that Jeffrey Epstein had a urologist treating his maybe genetic disorder, maybe just reproductive disorder? Like, he had something was wrong with his dick, Akilah.
Yes.
We can know for sure.
And I mean, you know, like, I think it tracks. Listen, I can't speak for why horrible people do the things they do, but I'm sure if my dick was super fucked up, I would surround myself with like young girls who were models who made me feel like I could get those kinds of girls, because you probably couldn't get anybody and you were compensating. But, you know, I'm not going to make any excuses. I think that there are probably plenty of people who have that who are not, you know, sexual predators. I think he's just especially terrible.
He's just a very terrible person. What else did you find that dragged you down a rabbit hole?
I mean, I'll just like say I got really, like, the way that I'm searching is not clinical or scientific.
Same.
It's like a word shows up in an email and then I just like put it down to search a new word that showed up. So it's like I kept finding things about just finances. There was an early email where he was fighting with, I'm not sure if she was like a young girl or, but she was definitely like international, moved to the US, had opened a nail salon, was doing massages there. and he was like incensed that she wouldn't respond to one of his messages. And like likes to hold the fact that he paid for the salon over her head. That was also the case for like a lot of these young models where it's just like, oh, thank you so much. You're paying for my education. There was one person who I think was one of his assistants who was like, I see that you're paying for someone else's like braces. I would like to get the braces and education paid for. Like, it's clear.
Braces.
And like braces is a big one. So like I again, it's a very upsetting thing to look at, but that was like a term that came up enough times that I was like, let's go ahead and see how many people he bought braces because they're literal children. I think the way he was so demeaning about women's bodies, even as he was like, you know, being sent models from around the world, is just very telling.
Like, he was calling them fat.
Calling them fat, often, like, another term that, like, just came up to me was, like, thighs, where he's just talking about how big their thighs are and how she should wear a one-piece instead of a two-piece and all of these things. And I'm like, this is, I mean, beyond being just, like, you're a piece of shit, it's, like, very obvious grooming to where, like, his approval become some kind of currency where it's like, I'm coming to the island and I'm skinny like you wanted is a way to get some sort of preferential treatment. And it's like, I just hate that the world had to be so small for them. But I think that like just the finances of like those sort of interactions mixed with like the global talking to Steve Bannon and Peter Thiel about like, you know, sinking certain countries' currency to raise the U.S. currency and like endless emails about like the stock market day to day and like pumping and dumping. Like, I don't watch a ton of industry. It plays in my house, I'll say. I find it to be a little gross from time to time. But I'm like, this is, he doesn't seem to be some sort of like financial expert or genius. He seems to be playing it really fast and loose with other people's finances and somehow like skimming enough off the top. And so I think that like, I guess the idea that he is some sort of genius because he has amassed this wealth, which like also feels a little, I don't know, dubious. I don't know that the wealth is real. Or like, you know, I think that like the plan was always to die before you had to pay it back or like the IRS came knocking. And like, why would they? You have so many friends in the government who are not going to send them after you.
I think it's, I mean, it's like one of those things that the financial discussions and the fact that he seems kind of like not any smarter than like a banker with a Series 7, that if you just walked into a place and you tried to find somebody who could do like financial advice for you that has a Series 7 license, they would have the same amount of knowledge that he had. Like, it feels like there's something that we're not seeing here. And something that struck me about the financials was that there wasn't much, you know, this is a sex abuse investigation, so it wouldn't have centered on financials, but so much of his life was swept up in the sex abuse investigation. It's very strange that what he did for his clients, like specifically what he did for his clients, is not something that we have any awareness of. Like, there's nothing, and I've heard, and a lot of people think this, that the thing about the Epstein files that has a lot of rich people scared isn't necessarily the sexual abuse, because there isn't a lot of like smoking gun tapes of, there are certain people that are implicated in that way, but it's not like all of these men are implicated. I feel like that the issue here is that if all of Epstein's shit came to light, what would happen was an exposure of a massive money laundering ring around the world, and people stealing money from their employees and stealing money from taxpayers and stealing money from public funds, and and having Jeffrey Epstein make it look like it came to them authentically or via grants or via this or whatever. And it feels to me like the lack of information about what exactly he was doing for his clients is very telling, because where is it? Where is that information? It's
what
somewhere.
Is it?
Where is
it? I mean,
what
maybe
is
it's in that other 2.5 million files, you know? Like, I think that something that is sort of interesting is, like, they've clearly tried to hide Donald Trump throughout this. And in the same way that it's, like, shoddy and not redacting, like, the names and faces of victims, you know, if you search Donald's with, like, not an apostrophe, because Jeffrey Epstein seems allergic to any sort of punctuation, or DJT, there's so many initials. I think that there is something deeper to do with him, to do with other countries. They speak in a lot of code. but it does seem to all center around money. Something that a friend of mine brought up, the fact that he's mostly dealing with, like, very old money. Like, he doesn't seem that interested in people who have a few million dollars. And I think that, like, in our country, in a moment where we're all sort of focusing on class consciousness and this sort of, like, outsized wealth that billionaires have, he's absolutely not looking at, like, people who have a few million dollars. And, like, we're all still so far beneath what's going on there. Like, the Rothschilds are in there 12,000 times, and it's lowering because apparently, like, every day they're deleting more of those files. So I do think that this is, like, something that is a little bit... you know, he's doing something that is obviously illegal globally and also, like, influenced by generational wealth beyond, like, a few generations.
Yeah. It does feel like the thread in the sweater that if you pull it, suddenly, like, billionaires are going to be, like, dragged from their homes, like, finally dragged through the street.
Finally.
It's like, you guys wouldn't pay your fair share of taxes when that's all people wanted.
Exactly.
People would have left you alone.
We could have done this the easy way.
Done it the easy way. And now we're doing it the French Revolution way. Yes. All right, we're going to take a quick break and return to our mutual descent into becoming Candace Owens. Hysteria is brought to you by Books. Okay, folks, we've heard your cries for help. There's a lot of pressure on you on Valentine's Day, and I'm here to help you get it right. You gotta go with the Books company.
Books delivers modern bouquets fresh to your door. Plus, with our code Hysteria, you get 25% off. Books flowers are fresh cut from the best farms, so you get bigger, brighter blooms that last way longer. They have incredible flowers, even roses grown on the side of a volcano. And Books makes it easy. Pick the bouquet, the delivery date, and you're done. That's why Books has over 50,000 five-star reviews.
If you're hearing this ad, this is your reminder. Valentine's Day is coming up. If you have Valentine's Day related responsibilities, now is the time to get your ducks in a row. Guys, girls, whoever you're sending to, whoever you would be sending to, this is your reminder. You can just take care of it today, right now. And just to be clear, when your loved one says, "Don't get me anything," that does not mean no flowers. Flowers still score every time. Valentine's Day is February 14th. If you don't know that, that's probably a problem. But it is February 14th this year and every year. And it's about a week after the big game. So get your order in now and skip the last minute panic. Go to Books.com. Use our promo code Hysteria for 25% off. That's Books.com. Promo code Hysteria. Books, promo code Hysteria.
Hysteria is brought to you by Ritual. You know, Erin, you can't out-exercise a bad diet.
And you can't?
No, you can't. You can't. Same goes for your multivitamin, which is why Ritual's team of scientists pored over thousands of studies to identify the common gaps between nutrient needs and what people are actually consuming across different life stages. While a balanced diet is a crucial component of supporting a healthy lifestyle, nutrient gaps can still happen due to genetics, dietary preferences, and even modern farming practices that deplete soil from nutrients. And that's where a multivitamin can really come in handy.
I like Ritual. I know I need a vitamin. Some days, all I do is graze on whatever snacks are available in the office snack closet. And I don't think that that is a balanced diet. That's probably not a balanced diet.
I mean, you don't do it every day, but that's why you take your Ritual every day.
That's why I take my Ritual. And here's the thing. Not all vitamins are created equal. Some vitamins taste like a chore.
Yeah, and don't digest well.
They don't digest well, and they remind you of it all day. You're like, hey, remember how you took that vitamin? Remember how unpleasant it was? Remember how you took that vitamin? Not Ritual.
Vitamin burps.
Vitamin burps are terrible, but not with Ritual. And they're essential for women 18 and over. Contains 9 key nutrients in 2 delayed-release capsules. The capsules are packaged with a minty essence,
which prevents
that I took a vitamin feeling that you could have with other multis. Ritual multivitamins are vegan, non-GMO, project verified, gluten and major allergen free, and made traceable. Instead of striving for perfect health, aim for supporting foundational health. Save 25% on your first month at ritual.com/hysteria. That's ritual.com/hysteria for 25% off your first month. And we're back. Akilah Hughes is with me, and we're talking about the Epstein files drop and how it has driven both of us to the brink of insanity. So we were talking right before the break about how there's all these elements from conspiracy literature that we're seeing come up here. And it's like, oh, my gosh, it was real. What do you make of the fact that it seems like QAnon was actually patched together from a bunch of almost correct things? Is that causing your head to spin at all?
Well, I mean, no, because I think that the files also sort of implicate that, like, Steve Bannon was really seeding a lot of that. And so I do think it was based on a lot of true stuff. But even in the way now that, you know, the White House is pushing that it's mostly Democrats and, you know, the Clintons are going to be testifying, but not any of these Republican side people. I think that, like, I think putting out half of the truth is, I think, it would have been sufficient if this haul hadn't come out. Like, people would have just said, oh, well, this is like a Democratic issue or a Democrat side issue. And so, you know, like, we can take it seriously and we can get super incensed. And, it, you know, we don't need the actual files to prove that. We'll believe anything negative about the Democrats. And now that it's out and it's like, it's actually everybody. It's actually like across the board, people with
outsized
wealth.
It's men.
It's men. It's men. And it's white men. I will say Obama is not in here.
Yeah, that's true. Neither is like, Biden, I don't think. I don't think Biden's in there doing anything bad.
And neither was Hunter. There was a very funny tweet where somebody was like, okay, all of these villains are in here, but Hunter Biden's nowhere. And somebody responded, yeah, because he liked crack and Latinas, not being a pedophile. And it's like, right, like, let's just have a level head about this. What he was doing was self-destruction, not mass destruction.
Right, right. Let's talk about the way that Epstein was woven into a lot of deep internet lore, because people are kind of poking at stuff and we're finding out that he emailed with Peter Thiel, who I listened to part of an interview with him the other day, and I always forget that his voice, he like barks. I and he swallows a lot and he's got so much spit in his mouth, and it's like, how did he become a billionaire? Anyway, he offered to join, Epstein offered to join Peter Thiel taking Gawker down. And as one of my fellow, my former colleagues at Gawker Media said via, I think, Blue Sky the other day, there's a reason that the upswell against Gawker at the time was so intense. And part of it was because Gawker was poking into Epstein long before most mainstream organizations were poking into Epstein. It was like it was like Julie K. Brown at the Miami Herald and Gawker. Like, those were the two, and then like Vicky Ward. Those were the entities that were actually trying to poke holes or bring this Epstein story to light. But Akila, you found, or your partner found, that Epstein was actually involved in a lot more deep web stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say everybody go follow Garbage Day. It's a it's an email newsletter
it's really
about
good.
Tech and all of these things. And Ryan Broderick is my boyfriend. And so I was reading it, but we've both been in this rabbit hole all weekend. And it just is so egregious. Like, the first real start is sort of Jeffrey Epstein playing World of Warcraft and deciding that, like, microtransactions should be a major part of all video games. And so just for people who are casual about video games, you know how if you ever played Candy Crush, you like the game is free, but you can pay 5 cents, 50 cents, a dollar, all of your money to get special things in the game, more lives, more, you know, power-ups, whatever. That's sort of something that he was very adamant about. And it also sort of like informed his obsession with crypto. But to go back to like internet, because that's like very online gameplay that I think, you know, sort of struck a chord. But the 4chan of it all is very concerning.
Yeah. What happened with the 4chan stuff?
Right. So he was introduced to the guy who started 4chan, this guy, Christopher Poole. I think his handle on there is Moot.
Did he start all of 4chan, or was it just one message board?
It was all of it.
Oh, okay.
And he was interested. Basically, they had taken down a political message board. They were like, you know why? Like, this is a waste. We don't want to have it on the website. And, you know, Epstein was adamant about getting in touch with him over emails, because this is sort of like a typical millennial who's just like flaky and doesn't know who Jeffrey Epstein is and has no clue why he would take a lunch and wakes up at noon. And this is back when he was probably 25. But he was getting all of these emails and told to like talk to him. And after they finally did speak, you know, the next day, the political message board went back up. And that's where you get the sort of QAnon and all of the alt-right, like the Pizzagate, the Gamergate, the like huge backlash to Me Too. All of that is coming out of one major board. And, you know, I think something that just sort of stuck out to me is that they're, I think on the left, we've been gaslit into like thinking that like this is just natural way that things have progressed. Like the country is moving away from woke. The country is moving away from diversity and, you know, having women involved in anything. And it's like actually very manufactured.
Mm-hmm.
I think for them, and when I say them, it's like Peter Thiel, Jeffrey Epstein, all of these like sort of power players. The idea that like, I mean, they talk about Me Too a ton, but it's like the idea that they would ever be held accountable or that like men being held accountable for their behavior towards women on a massive scale outside of their control, because they're trying to control like media narratives, was really scary to them. I mean, mm-hmm. Woody Allen is all throughout these files. It, with Sun Yi sort of throwing young women under the bus, basically saying that the Cosby stuff is a witch hunt. And all of that was just like internet discourse. Like, I think what has made me feel craziest is this idea that like the left is causing these culture wars when in actuality, it's like very concentrated power on the right, you know, trickling down misinformation and hatred through like young boys who use this anonymous website and sort of like fall into like that incel, you know, lane. Mm-hmm. I think it's like, it's just to see that the incels were like being organized is horrifying.
Yeah. I mean, and I've talked about this. I bark about this all the time on the show, but there's a disconnect in the public way that we process information between what we're taking in and an understanding that what we're taking in can be and is manipulated and
totally.
is aggressively manipulated. And it's being aggressively manipulated to create the illusion of something being more popular than it is so
yes.
that it can draw out these fringes and actually beget some like a real trail. So like
yeah.
the germ of it will end up being just something fake, something planted,
yeah.
but then people will hear it enough times and they're like, oh, actually I agree. And then it becomes like a real thing. Like the
yeah.
Gamergate thing.
Totally.
Backlash to Me Too. Jeffrey Epstein hated Time's Up. He hated
totally.
Me Too.
Yeah, exactly. Because
questioning men's right to do anything they want to women and girls undermines the social order that
yes.
they rely on to maintain power. Like that is it. That is what, and I think that something interesting about you mentioned the partisan nature, Republicans trying to make this sound like it's a partisan thing.
Yeah.
But I think it's really important for us to remember this is not a partisan thing. This is not mm-hmm. this is a patriarchy problem. This is a wealth problem. This is a 1% problem. At that level, I mean, Steve Bannon is hanging out with whoever will hang out with him. You know, it's
right.
all of these people have all of these divisions, the political divisions are to these people completely artificial. The only thing that matters is whatever it takes for them to retain access to power and money. And that's where we're at. All right. Final point, Akilah, I wanted to talk a little bit about something that you and I both expressed concern over, and that is the temporary nature of these files and the fact
yes.
that as we're looking through them, we are aware that some of them are disappearing underneath our feet. How
yeah.
does that make you feel about the way that history is being recorded?
I mean, it's actually just awful. I think that, like, and you mentioned this in the meeting, and I hadn't really considered it, but I think the nature of AI being so prevalent and so like what we're seeing being manipulated, I think the idea that things, you know, the Wayback Machine might not have every website available that is listed here, but it could also just be replaced by, you know, something fake one day is really scary. And I think that like I don't have confidence in our government to, you know, preserve the truth. They've made really clear that like the truth is whatever they say it is, and that it can be swayed by whoever is in power, and it doesn't really matter what, you know, especially in a case where it's like, this is a private citizen, you guys could just tell us the truth about this. The fact that it's just so, I don't know, none of this stuff is permanent. It's scary. I've seen discourse on the internet since they dropped on Friday, you know, with people just saying, did somebody get the screen grab of this? Because that page is gone now. And like the fact that in just a couple of days, those things can be gone, much less, you know, if the website just ceases to exist or stop operating, is scary and wild. And like, it reminds me, like, you know, there's this woman who filmed all of her television for like decades in the 90s. I'm like, do we need that for the internet? Like, I think you proposed it, but like, we need data centers to just like save the whole internet and refresh it and archive it.
Every 15 minutes, we need them to download the whole internet and just save it. And then at the end of the day, do some sort of like file defrag situation, like push the files together and like delete the two similar, like, anyway,
right, exactly. Yeah, no duplicates, need, like, but like, keep it.
I feel like we need librarians now more than ever. And I think that people in the past, you know, this is happening at the same time that public libraries and librarians are under attack from the right. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that is an accident, because it better serves those in power if history and information is easy to seize and manipulate versus if it's like printed out and if it's in a library and you can go find it and pull it out and look at it yourself. That's not something the government or a rich person or, you know, Peter Thiel can go back in and change and say it never said what you think it said. And
totally.
It's really disturbing to think about that. I am very worried that we are living already in what will be remembered as a digital dark age, because so much of our experiences as human beings and so much of our history is recorded in formats that won't be accessible to future people. And so much of it is being drowned out by disinformation, misinformation, and AI-generated slop, that how will we be able to tell the difference between what's real and what was never real in the future? And ending that on a high note. I'm sure there'll be more Epstein file stuff to talk about in the future, because there's so much to get into that we didn't get into, like the Justice Department and all of the lies that they've told about this at every turn. The fact that like those 15 MAGA influencers who were given
their binders that I guess said nothing, or like keep smiling for the camera when they opened it.
So like, funny that picture of libs of TikTok with her dumb face holding up her binder is like so fucking funny.
She has since gone private because everyone's like, hello.
Print that picture out and put it on a t-shirt, because I feel like after she wore a picture of Taylor Lorenz crying on her t-shirt when Taylor interviewed her, she has earned all the, like,
100%.
All the t-shirts that are mean to her in the world. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about coming distractions and whether or not they will actually be distracting and whether or not they should be distracting. So stick around. Hysteria is brought to you by Brodo. Alyssa, I've got a sick house right now. People
and
in my
I
home
have
are,
my Brodo.
Oh, don't do the influencer tippity tappity.
I was being funny.
She's
because I'm who's like the least like an influencer.
That's true. You're the least influencer, but that is a great manicure and it's holding
Thank
up.
Thank you.
It looks
Thank
really
you.
Good. Alyssa is tapping her beautiful manicure on a cup of piping hot Brodo broth.
Now chicken
broth. Now my house right now, I am probably the only person. I think the baby might be a little sick, but she's got a really good attitude and that kind of disguises it. But my husband and daughter are both not feeling well this week. And yesterday I was at home with my husband and he was sick. And I was like, drink broth. We've got this Brodo broth. Drink it, please. And so I heated him up a mug of it. And a couple hours later, he's like, that stuff's like magic. I feel so much better. I feel so much better. I had a cup for myself just because I didn't want to be left out of the broth party.
Right.
And I felt better too. I wasn't even feeling sick. I was like, you know what? I'm glad I had this broth. It was really good. This podcast is sponsored by Brodo. Welcome to the hottest trend in nutrition for the last 2,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
Bone broth. Brodo's bone broths are made from scratch, no concentrates, preservatives, or shortcuts, so you get the best broth money can buy.
Brodo makes bone broths that are delicious enough to drink. Each cup delivers whole food protein, about 10 grams per serving, along with collagen-building amino acids, electrolytes, and nutrients to support gut health, immunity, joints, skin, and general wellness, all under 50 calories and with zero sugar or fat. I've gotten the sampler. I love all of them. but I really like the rosemary and lemon. That one is sort of my favorite. But today I'm just having classic chicken. Mm. Brodo was launched by award-winning chef Marco Canora. He started selling Brodo on the side of his East Village Manhattan restaurant 11 years ago. And now, whether you want a quick warm drink or a nourishing base for cooking, Brodo makes it easy. They ship nationwide, so you don't have to be in New York City to enjoy Chef Marco's masterpiece.
Shop the best broth on the planet with Brodo. Head to brodo.com/hysteria for 20% off your first subscription order and use code hysteria for an additional $10 off. Once again, that's brodo.com/hysteria for 20% off your first subscription order and an additional $10 off if you use our promo code hysteria.
Hysteria is brought to you by Babbel. Erin, I've been using Babbel.
I heard.
Yeah.
You told me.
I'm really practicing for our trip to Japan. And I do have to say, an older mind takes a lot longer to pick things back up. Things that were very easy when I was 18 are a lot harder at almost 50. Mm-hmm. But Babbel's getting me there. Babbel's getting me there. I'm very proud.
What's the sentence or phrase that you're proudest of picking up from Babbel?
I would say, gochisousama deshita. Now that means if you're at a restaurant in Japan, you don't want to say if someone offers you more food, you don't want to say I'm full or I don't want any more. You say, oh, thank you so much. It has been a feast.
Oh, I like
right?
that.
Isn't that a nice way of saying it?
That is a nice way of saying it. The feast is in the past tense. Do
exactly.
not continue
Thank you
the
so
feast.
Much. I'm good.
Learning a language with Babbel is all about small steps, big wins, and progress you can actually track and feel. Their bite-sized lessons fit easily into your daily routine and are also easy to remember. Just 10 minutes a day is enough to start seeing real results.
Babbel recognizes that real-world connections are at the heart of language learning. Their courses are designed by over 200 language experts, real human beings, to teach you relevant words and phrases you'll actually use, so you can start speaking with confidence in as little as 3 weeks. And Babbel is more than just lessons. They even offer a large collection of podcasts, where Babbel experts reveal language secrets and offer an inside look at local cultures. Make fast, lasting progress with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Babbel has over 25 million subscriptions sold worldwide, and with 14 languages to choose from, every course comes with a 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 55% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/hysteria. Get up to 55% off at babbel.com/hysteria, spelled babbel.com/hysteria. Rules and restrictions may apply.
And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast that cannot wait for Olympic hockey now that heated rivalry is in our minds and hearts.
Yes.
I've only seen one episode. Well, I've seen two episodes. Have you watched Heated Rivalry?
I watched it to completion over the course of 2 days. And that is the way to describe it, to completion. I loved it. I thought it was very fun.
Yeah, I thought the first two episodes were, like, it wasn't what I expected. I talked about it on the show. It wasn't what I expected. It was a lot higher quality than I expected.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be, like, a Lifetime movie, but it was, like, it was like
Listen,
good.
I think the writing in places was a Lifetime movie, but that's okay because of, like, they gave us, we needed pop culture in that moment, and they delivered. So thank you.
Absolutely. Well, the world is burning outside, but the cultural show, which usually means not politics, must go on. Awards season is in full swing. Mm-hmm. 2026 Milan Cortina Winter Olympics kick off on Friday, and the Super Bowl is this weekend. So some of these are, some people might treat these as distractions, but they actually play a role in reflecting political narratives and what progress is being made or not being made. So I'm really curious, Akilah, how we expect these things to play out. Like, you know, the Super Bowl, it seems like it's really teed up to be a moment, a cultural flashpoint. And we touched on it a little bit earlier when we talked about, like, Turning Point doing their own halftime show.
The counter-programming with the great Bob Ritchie, according to J.D. Vance. I had to Google who Bob Ritchie was, but I guess that's Kid Rock.
Yeah. Kid Rock lost me when he said in the song Cowboy that he's going to come to L.A. and spend all his time on Hollywood and Vine. I was like, you don't know dick about what you're talking about.
He's going to David Buster's and you're not going to stop him. He's on his way.
It's like, okay, what are you, like, you're going to drop some, like, pee on a gum covered sidewalk and, like,
yeah, you're gonna go meet up with an off-brand Elmo and hold a pet snake. What are you doing there? What are you doing?
I mean, if you want to go there, it's fine. You're gonna have a hard time finding parking. But some of the names on the, like, counter programming halftime show, I thought were they seemed computer generated or something. I would put in my file of joke names. So I have a file of joke names. You know, that are like Trevor Desk, like whatever. Yeah. Right. That would be like, it was like Brantley Blarkston or something. They sound like, you know, that graphic from a Japanese video game that was like about baseball.
These are American names.
Yeah, yes. And they're named like Slyke Tomansky and stuff. Yeah. Like it was like Uncanny Valley of like Red State baby names.
Yes, right.
But meanwhile, Bad Bunny's performing at halftime of
the
Super Bowl.
The biggest artist on earth is performing at the actual game that everyone will be watching.
Yeah. Are you expecting there to be a political moment in the Bad Bunny halftime show?
Well, here's the thing. I think it'll start way earlier than his performance at halftime. Green Day's doing the pre-show. So, like, we're locked in.
There's going to be some naughty words written on the back of a guitar or like.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to.
Yeah, American Idiot is going to be very pointed, I think.
Yeah.
And so I think that the entire event is always politicized, right? Like, it's always very much like rah-rah military before the show starts. And then, you know, all of the, we get America the Beautiful and we get the Black National Anthem, which everybody groans about. And I'm like, shut up, it's Black History Month. It's a great song.
It is.
And so then we'll get to halftime. And I think that, like, Bad Bunny has the sort of, you know, the curse of all people of color, where, like, regardless of what he does or says out there, it's going to be seen as political. And so, like, I don't know that he has to make some big statement. You know, I think he said a lot at the Grammys. And so I think that his music stands for itself. It's also, like, you know, the album of the year was all in Spanish and was truly a love letter to Puerto Rico. And so I think that him doing that in a country that seems to, like, vilify its relationship with Puerto Rico is political. So I look forward. He's going to look great. And he's going to sound great. I've seen him live. I'm over the moon.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a great halftime show. Unfortunately, I have to host What a Day the next day, so I'm going to be in the office. I agree.
Well, have fun doing that.
I love the What a Day team, and I love hosting the show, but I agreed to host it.
Sundays were always tough.
I was like, February 8th, yeah, that should be fine. Yeah, that should be fine. They asked me with enough of a heads up, that's totally fine. And I texted my husband. He was like, yeah, that's fine. And then I was like, oh, it's Super Bowl.
Well, you can always get hot dogs delivered to the office.
I might actually do that. I might do that. Yeah. And I'll leave a fat tip because it's Super Bowl Sunday, and I'm sure they're very, very, very busy that day. I'm of two minds when it comes to cultural and sports events during times of political strife. And that is that athletes have this opportunity to really use their stage to make a political statement and remind people that even though they might watch politics or award shows as an escape, there actually is no escape for people that are impacted by these policies. Like, the people of Minneapolis are still basically under a state of federal invasion. The response, I read recently that 3,000 Minnesotans have now been trained to be like ICE watch and readiness people, which is like, I think, about the same size as the force of ICE agents that arrived in the state. And they're now, so that is like, well, look at I guess you guys fucked up a little bit, because now there's a whole bunch of people that actually have training that are trained to, like, handle you. But I think that on one hand, I'm like, you know, it's a great opportunity for athletes to use their moment to be like, hey, guess what? This other stuff's going on. Didn't you have fun watching me do it, like, ice dance or ski jump or whatever?
Exactly.
But, like, guess what? But then on the other hand, I feel like it's a shame that athletes work their whole lives to be athletes, and then they get into a situation where they're finally at the top of their game and they have to do something that they didn't train for, and then they're not trained in. They're not public speakers. You know, they are people who are really, really good at skating really fast or skiing really good.
Yeah, going downhill on ice. Like, that is their passion.
Right. And it's like, okay, so they've risen to the top of their game. Like, I'm just imagining, like, if you are if you run for Congress and you win, but, like, right at your victory victory party, you have to play one-on-one basketball against somebody, you know?
Yeah, that would be unfortunate.
Yeah. I mean, like, Obama could ball.
But, right. He would look forward to it, actually. Yes. He's like, do I have to do a speech or can I just do, like, play a game of horse against, like, Mitch McConnell?
Fine. Right. But it also feels like, you know, now that we're in this moment, that it's not anybody's fault. It feels like it's a not your fault, but it is your responsibility type situation.
Yes.
Like,
totally.
What would you like to see from Olympic athletes?
Well, I mean, I think that, like, what I would like to see, honestly, would be, like, people who are media literate say something about, like, what's happening in their country. And so, like, I expect us to see the national anthem getting booed at pretty much every event internationally, because why wouldn't it? Like, America is seen by most of the world right now as a villain. You know, we're threatening to invade Venezuela and Greenland and Canada and Mexico and whoever, like, looks at us the wrong way. So I can understand why, you know, faith in this country is down. And I think that, like, to have people who are, I think, in many ways, some of the best of what this country has to offer, say something that, you know, can dispel some of that hatred and some of that, I don't know, just the horribleness right now would be nice. It is, like, a tough place for them to be in. I also think, though, that, like, what a privilege. And I guess I, like, kind of try to see it from, like, the audience perspective. Most people in this country do not read. A lot of them can't read. and our media is, like, actively just not trying to have these stories play out. Like, today when we're recording this, there have been huge layoffs at the Washington Post. We're just in a moment where I think that, like, getting real information, or at least, like, being made aware of situations that are happening is, you know, there are just fewer and fewer resources for that.
Yeah.
And so, like, to have a platform where people are watching, even if it is to escape, for you to be the first person to say, this is happening in Minnesota, this is happening, you know, like, this is what the president is planning. Here's what's in the Epstein files, which I think would be crazy. I think we're not going to hear that at the Olympics. But
like,
in
that,
any case, like, I think...
That would be, I mean, if, like, a UK winner was like, hey, yeah, Prince Andrew should be in jail, I'd be like, that's awesome. That's
kinda, yeah, exactly,
cool.
Yeah. Like,
I mean,
but I think that's it. It's,
yeah,
like, it's a responsibility. It's like, you know, with great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah.
But also, like, what a great opportunity to, I think, inform people.
Mm-hmm.
It just sucks because it's like, yeah, I don't think that everyone is a great public speaker. And not necessarily the best messenger for a lot of this, but, like, they're deleting our actual messengers. So,
mm-hmm,
you know, better them than nobody.
Yeah. I mean, what you said about getting through to people who think that they're watching something that isn't about politics is really important, because people are in silos. People,
yeah,
are in, like, these very fortified silos where they deliberately designed it so they don't have to listen to anything that offends them or upsets them or challenges them ever.
Right.
And so if you're somebody that is in a silo, like, you're welcome into the silo, not because of what you politically say. I feel like,
right,
you have a responsibility to poke holes in it and be like, hey, guys, I mean, Minnesota has 20 athletes playing for Team USA.
Right.
They're one of the biggest delegations in the Winter Olympics for obvious reasons.
Yeah, it's freezing.
A lot of time to practice.
Exactly.
A lot,
yeah,
of time
there's
to
a lot of ice.
A lot of ice.
Plenty of opportunity to slide down it or on top of it.
Yes.
That's right.
There's not that many downhill skiing, not huge in Minnesota, but cross country skiing, people do it.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up not far from Minneapolis, St. Paul. And one winter when I was, I think, like, fifth grade, it got warm in January, like, warm, like 40 degrees.
Jeez,
and
yeah.
Everything on the playground, no, everything on the playground melted. And then that night, the temperature went down to, like, 20 below. So it just was, like, snap freeze.
Ice.
And the next morning, we came to school, and they were, like, the whole playground was covered in, like, perfect ice. And so we couldn't go outside and play unless we were wearing ice skates. And we could just, like, ice skate around,
aww,
the entire playground, and it was awesome. And people
That's
got...
cute.
A lot of people got hurt, but we had fun.
You're like, I saw people fall every 0.5 seconds.
Yes. Yeah. A lot. One time I was, like, trying to climb the sliding. We had a sliding hill in the backyard of our school, and I was trying to climb it and it, like, on an icy part, and my hand slipped and I, like, busted my nose, and there was, like, a trail of my nose blood down the sliding hill. Look, sports are a great way for people to feel both connected and disconnected. And I think that disconnected from like the bummer nature mm-hmm. of our current reality, but also connected to each other as human beings. Like,
yeah,
you know, we watch someone be really good at a sport and it kind of like doesn't matter if we have different ideas about fiscal policy.
Right,
it's sort
right.
of like, I'm so excited that you've worked so hard and you're doing a really good job. And yeah. like, there are certain things that are political issues that I think cross the line into moral issues. Like if you're somebody who's like pro ICE raid, then like, fuck you, and I
right.
hope, I wish you ill.
Yes.
But I think that there are some like moderate political differences that are completely negotiable, and it's really important for us to remember that there's way more decent, normal people than there are fucking Stephen Miller-esque
totally.
Psychos.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, that concludes our talk about what we expect people to say. I feel like the Oscars are going to be a real
fireworks oh, yeah.
show. Mm-hmm. Sinners is going to win every award and every single speech. They're going to have like a new verse in a
yeah.
diss track. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Sani Petty. This episode of Hysteria is brought to you by Wild Grain. Wild Grain is the first bake from frozen subscription box for sourdough breads, artisanal pastries, and fresh pastas. Plus, all items conveniently bake in 25 minutes or less. Now, listen, I'm in the, mm-hmm. 10% of the country that isn't currently just being pummeled by winter.
It's cold here.
It is cold everywhere. And I think that if you are listening to this and you are cold where you are, this is your sign to just the simplest path from where you are right now, cold, uncomfortable, to cozy, fulfilled, excited to just burrow into a blanket and 100%. Not go outside, freshly baked bread.
Or I did it on Sunday, Erin.
Or, when yeah, or a pastry.
The snow started and we put some sourdough rye into the oven and my hubs was like, what is that smell? And I'm like, that's fresh baked bread. He was blown away.
That's the smell of not going outside. That is the smell of just hunkering down and enjoying some bread and waiting until the winter passes so that you can go outside again.
Yeah.
Wild Grain's boxes are fully customizable in addition to their variety box, which I have tried. Excellent. They have a gluten-free box, which is amazing. A lot of people who can't have gluten also miss bread, so that's great.
Yeah.
Vegan box and a new protein box. There's nothing like having an artisan bakery in your freezer to chase away the winter chill. Now is the best time to stay in and enjoy comforting homemade meals with Wild Grain. I highly recommend giving Wild Grain a try. Right now, Wild Grain is offering our listeners $30 off your first box, plus free croissants for life when you go to wildgrain.com/hysteria to start your subscription today. That's $30 off your first box and free croissant for life. Is that how I say it? You
perfect.
Say that. Okay.
Croissant.
That's $30 off your first box and free croissant for life when you visit wildgrain.com/hysteria, or you can use promo code hysteria at checkout.
Hi, my name is Mitch Landrieu.
My name is Erin Haynes.
My name is Jennifer Palmieri, and we're hosting a new series called Long Play. The South is the new political epicenter of the country. Democrats are way on their heels in this region, but Republicans are going through their own reckoning in the South, too.
I mean, the South has always shaped American politics. We know that.
The stakes could not be higher, but to win the South, you have to understand it.
People in the South feel really misunderstood, left behind, put down on, and they want to explain that to somebody.
We're traveling across 6 Southern states to explore the people, the issues, the assumptions that no longer hold, and what the rest of us are missing about a region that will shape the future of our politics and our country. From Left, Right, and Crooked Media, starting July 27th, watch Long Play Series on YouTube at youtube.com/longplayseries or listen wherever you get your podcasts.
And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for Morning Catherine O'Hara.
Mm-hmm.
What a talent.
One of the best. The best to ever do it.
One of the best. I was watching old clips of her from SCTV when she passed on Friday. And it was so, she was just so fucking funny. And it didn't
yes.
seem like she was trying. It didn't seem like she always had this sort of like smile on her face. Like she was trying to work through some pain and awkwardness. So that made her characters feel very human. And
yeah, majorly. I mean, also, you know, there are lots of dog shows throughout the year, and there was one happening this week. And when the terriers competed, they did a tribute to her for her role in bringing terriers, you know, to the mainstream. So everybody loves a terrier. We love Catherine O'Hara.
Oh my God, I love that. I love that role. I love her in Beetlejuice. I think that is. She's also, we've talked about it on the show, she's the queen of Q4. Without Catherine O'Hara's contribution specifically to movies that you watch during October, November, and December, culture would be different. She's like
totally
indelibly part of the holiday season. Like Nightmare Before Christmas, Beetlejuice, Home Alone, Home Alone 2.
Home Alone 2. Exactly, the full Home Alone franchise.
Well, no, because she's not in Home Alone 3, and that's why it's
right,
a bad movie.
And no one was. That's when it got bad. That's when it was. They were like, let's just keep doing this. And we're like, I think Kevin McAllister achieved what he needed to do. They're done.
Yeah.
The Sticky Bandits were conquered.
The Sticky Bandits are in jail. They're probably, you know, whatever. I loved reading about how she, like, remained close with co-stars for long periods of time. So even if she wasn't, like, actively friends with them, they still had, like, positive feelings about each other.
Totally.
She was at Macaulay Culkin's Walk of Fame ceremony.
Yes, which is wild. It's, like, very sweet to, like, still be playing his mom all this time later. Like, really sweet.
Yeah, it's super sweet. She was amazing. And also, she left behind a husband and two children who are grown, and she seemed like such a great mom and great person.
Yeah.
She was declared honorary mayor of Brentwood.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And after she won her Academy or her Emmy, she was named honorary mayor of Brentwood. And it was the same year that Eugene Levy was the honorary mayor of Pacific Palisades. So they were like two cities next to each other. Yeah. I love that. Okay. Before we get to Sandy Petty, I have some announcements for the class. This year's Grammys were the best yet. And yes, Louis Vertel has thoughts. On Keep It, he and guest Nina Parker break down the night's biggest moments, the messiest performances, and the outfits we'll be arguing about all week. How did Chapel Roan do that thing with her nipples? That upset me.
Like, it was a lot.
I
don't know what, like, having titty curtains is something that I just don't think that I can pull off, but I don't know how the shirt worked, and also, like, how you couldn't really see nipple, but you could see nipple piercings. You know, we're in the future.
We're in the future. That was a, you know, it's funny because I feel like in the last 10 years, advancements in bras have been immense.
Boob tech has been through the roof.
Boob tech has really improved because I think that there was a period of time where they're like, I don't know, make two sacks and staple them together and that should be good to hold the titties. But now it's like they're doing space age things with boobs.
Yeah.
That's
right.
Amazing.
You could, like, wear a bra but not be feeling it. It's kind of it's a strange time, but you know what? I'm glad we got here, and I'm glad that it was prioritized somewhere.
And I'm glad, yes, and we saw the hard work of all the boob scientists on the red carpet with Chapel Roan's outfit. I want to celebrate their achievements. Plus, on Keep It, Paula Pell joins to talk about her new show, The Burbs. I accosted her on her way out of the studio because I love her. I think she's one of the funniest women in America. She's such a good writer. She's so fucking funny. And she was very nice to me, even though I think I was a lot. New episodes of Keep It every Wednesday, wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube. Now let's get to Sandy Petty. Akilah, I'm going to let you start.
Okay. This is a Petty that, like, I don't even think I realized I had until we started recording the episode. But it's been bothering me all week, which is that, like, we're securely in a new year. And as we all know, that YouTube has more viewership than pretty much anything on television. We're all watching YouTube videos all day, every day. Mm-hmm. But I just feel like the creators on YouTube really dropped the ball with the new year. There's nothing to watch. Like, we're scraping the bottom of the barrel. I'm watching old episodes of AD Home Tours because there's nothing new. And I think that, like, my petty is, like, look, you've somehow been able to, like, skirt traditional work to, like, create your own media ecosystems. You gotta feed the ecosystem. I'm out here dying. There's nothing to watch. YouTube is, like, suggesting me music videos that were made for 4 cents in people's garage because they're like, this is the only new thing being uploaded.
She's watched all the YouTube. She's reading reached the end of the YouTube.
I finished it. It's like back when the internet used to have an in and you had to refresh. I feel like YouTube has ended. And so I don't even know that this is so relatable, but if it is for you, you know, shout it out. I just feel like people didn't plan for more stuff to be happening this year. They were like really threw it all into, you know, Vlogmas and spending every day of December making stuff. And then the new year hit and we're just in the dregs. Yeah. I'm like the news is being suggested to me on YouTube. I don't go to YouTube for news.
I mean, I think a lot of people that are YouTube creators are now trying to do this weird thing where, like, they're trying to get deals with Netflix because Netflix is buying up all these podcasts. And
yeah.
Everything is everything's pivoting to everything else. And it's like, yes. Whoa, I'm a little dizzy. This is a lot. That's fair. I am a little bit scared for you. And for your mental health, that you have reached the end of YouTube.
I've been radicalized and unradicalized. That's how much I've seen. And it's all old. It's old radicalization. Somebody needs to radicalize me in a new way.
All right. Well, you heard that, listeners. If you're a YouTube creator, Akilah challenges you to
get back to work.
Get back to work.
Build back better on YouTube.
All right, yeah. I've got a petty, and this is a. I feel like we should really start mass producing a Fell for It Again award and sending it to people. I think when you purchase raw milk at the store, you should get a Fell for It Again award, like a Happy Meal toy, just tossed right in the grocery bag. But Ballerina Farm, aka Hannah Nealman, she is the. You know, the trad wife influencer who lives.
Yeah, the heir to millions or billions of dollars from the JetBlue guy.
Like a JetBlue guy, but they dress up like cowboys and they're like, she makes gum from scratch and it's just.
Yeah,
kind of
they
like,
do their like Marie Antoinette version of like being poor where they're like, we built a whole city where I get to pretend to be a pauper.
Yeah,
and then I go back to my helicopter.
Exactly. But she started selling raw milk from their farm. It has, well, if you wanted some of it, too bad. You missed your chance because sales of Ballerina Farms raw milk have been halted due to bacteria concerns. Mm-hmm. Bacteria concerns. High levels of coliform, which is the family of bacteria that includes E. coli. So literally, not only is Ballerina Farm full of shit, the raw milk that she is selling also full of shit.
And fully shitted.
Full of shit. There was a statement put out by Daniel Nealman who was like, actually, I'm paraphrasing here. It was like, actually, it seems like our farm was designed for pasteurizing milk.
He's like, we just forgot to turn on the stove. And so...
Yes. If you've ever milked a cow, you know it's very difficult to keep
gross.
That. Yeah. Well, it's just like
it's right down there with everything.
It's not gross. Actually, like I don't mind. I grew up next to like my grandparents had cows, and so I grew up going over there and like helping milk the cows. And it's not gross. The cows are like really sweet, and there's like a
sure,
kind of,
but like you gotta wash them hands.
You gotta wash
you
them hands.
You wouldn't eat a sandwich,
and you have to make sure the bucket is like pristine. And you can only do it like literally like once. I mean, I've drank raw milk before just because of where we got our milk when I was a kid. But like, I think usually if we were not gonna drink it right after straining it and like scamming the cream off, my dad would like heat it. I think.
Yeah.
But like, also we were like literally bespoke. Single buckets of milk. Like, it was not something scaled.
Bespoke. The whole family got their own custom milk buckets.
Yes, exactly. Mine
Well, I mean, to
one.
That point, I think it's a beautiful petty. I saw today that someone, like a child, died from raw milk this week. And so now it's, like, becoming this actual thing where all raw milk is being pulled. That should be, like, announced shortly, but if I can find that,
it should be
here
pulled.
We go. NBC News: Health officials in New Mexico are warning against consuming raw dairy products after a newborn baby in the state died from listeria.
Oh,
because it was drinking
horrible.
Raw milk. And what's worse is she was drinking it during pregnancy. The mom was. So it's like, okay, your baby was born with listeria.
Oh,
like, let's
no.
not drink the raw milk. I don't think we need to like test it. I don't think RFK sounds like a gravel road. Why do you think what he's doing is what you should be doing?
Right. He sounds like he's been gargling bleach. He sounds like
his throat is a garbage disposal.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
He sounds insane. His skin looks like Stretch Monster from the 90s. The monster that would attack yes. Stretch Armstrong.
Yes.
And we're over here listening to his suggestions. I mean, it's just,
ridiculous.
It's rough.
It's
so
ridiculous.
In any case.
It's ridiculous. And like I've seen some really dumb content where it's like, did you know that if you have raw milk, you can just like heat it up and that'll make it safe? It's like, that's called fucking pasteurization. Dumb.
Exactly.
Like, oh my God. And
yeah,
and
welcome to 1817. We all figured it out.
It's so people's insistence on not only not learning their lesson, but unlearning the lessons of the past. And then not learning the lesson when given the opportunity to relearn
right.
it. It is very frustrating.
Yeah.
And anti-survival, like this, like E. coli, foodborne illnesses, they're dangerous to normal people. They're dangerous.
Yeah.
They're especially dangerous, though, to people with compromised immune systems. People mm-hmm. with compromised immune systems include old people, children, and pregnant people. Because
yeah.
when you're pregnant, your immune system is suppressed because
yeah.
your body thinks your baby is an invading parasite, which it kind
right.
of is. But if your immune system is suppressed so that you don't, your body doesn't like eat the baby, right?
Yeah.
And so like it is so important for foodborne illnesses to be monitored and traced and don't
right.
put anything in your, like we're told we're not supposed to eat deli meat. We're not
right.
supposed to eat like a cold cut. We're not supposed to eat salmon.
I was thinking about that this morning when I read about the news where I was like, if pregnant people shouldn't eat it, should anybody eat it?
Like, we're like, it's wild. The likelihood of you getting it from a cold cut is low, but like, why even risk it? So
right.
most people just like put them on a little plate and microwave it for 5 seconds. But mm-hmm. like, it's just, ugh, this is so dumb. And it's so dumb that Maha, like this crunchy home birth thing, is like doing
right.
these things that are deliberately endangering the lives of pregnant people and their babies. Like,
mm-hmm.
fucking ridiculous. I know that like Ballerina Farm seems like a sweet lady and she looks pretty in dresses.
She
and
looks
stuff.
Cute in her like weird thick linens. But
yeah,
beyond that, like,
it's
guys.
Just, it's like, oh my God.
Like,
please.
Why do you think people on farms back in the like early 1900s had so many kids? It's because like half of them would die and
yes.
then the other half were like, you know, they had stuff wrong with them. Like, I just think that we gotta move with actual technology and advancements in health and like not fall for the, we were better off before. No, we weren't.
Yeah.
No, we weren't.
This is exactly where the fantasy that Ballerina Farm is selling collides with reality. Like,
yeah.
it is a fun little fantasy to scroll through and be like, oh my God, look at them and their little like army of kids and they're all so cute and they love running in the
mm-hmm.
field and look at all the space they have in the sun and Utah, it's so beautiful, blah, 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 blah. But then the reality is no, that's not real. You can't.
Yeah.
You can't
right,
do that.
Right, they have a staff anyway. Like,
yeah.
Hello?
Yeah. It's not real. So anyway, that's my petty. I'm feeling petty, but also it's like, come on, people. We are really in trouble as a species if we
yeah.
can't learn lessons that were learned for us. We can't even accept the lessons
I mean,
that were learned for
listen,
us.
Is this what Darwin was talking about? Some of us just got to put our heads down and have the milk that was pasteurized.
Yeah, I mean,
it just blinders on. Sorry to those other people, but
it's like, but yeah, I mean, that's the other thing that's super tragic is like, you know, it's not Ballerina Farm's kids that are getting, she's like
no,
sending poison out and making money and continuing
right.
to be this big influencer. And then the people suffering the consequences are people that fall for it.
Yeah.
And that fucking sucks. That
it's
sucks.
Really bad.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have for this episode. Super upbeat. Everybody's happy. Everybody's feeling
yes.
great about the future. Akili Hughes, I am so glad you were here for this week, even though we miss Alyssa very much. Every
yes,
time
always.
You join us, it feels like a blessing. So thank you so much for joining us this week. Listeners, if you want to get in touch, hysteria@crooked.com. Oh, Akili, do you have anything to plug?
Oh, totally. The new season of How Is This Better, my podcast with Courier Newsroom, comes back Friday and comes out every Friday. You can watch it on YouTube. So I'm going to start populating the algorithm. You can also find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Our first episode's about Puerto Rico and Bad Bunny. So
I was going to ask for a preview. That sounds really exciting. Are there any other topics that you've started to work on that you're excited about?
Yeah, we're talking about home ownership as like just a pipe dream for young generations. You know, Donald Trump saying that he does not want to lower home prices when, you know, wages are stagnant does not bode well for the kids. We do an episode about that. But really, you know, anything that's happening in the news, we touch on quite a bit. So I would say I'm looking forward, but, you know, the show's called How Is This Better? The spoiler is it very rarely is.
Amazing. We'll be sure to check that out on YouTube and on wherever you get podcasts. And listeners, we love you so much. There will be more Hysteria for you next week. Don't forget to follow us at Crooked Media on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. Subscribe to Hysteria on YouTube for access to video versions of your favorite segments and other exclusive content. And if you're as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a nice review. Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Caroline Reston is our senior producer. Our executive producer is me, Aaron Ryan. And Alyssa Mastromonaco is our co-producer. Claire Fogarty is our associate producer. The show is engineered and edited by Jordan Cantor. We get audio support from Kyle Seglin and Charlotte Landis. Our video producers are Rachel Gajewski and Claudia Sheng. Matt DeGroat is our head of production. Adrian Hill is our head of news and politics. Kendra James is our executive producer of culture and entertainment. And thank you to Daisy Cruz and David Tolles for production and marketing support every week. Our production staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.
The Free Birth Society made millions selling a simple message to pregnant women. You don't need ultrasounds, doctors, or midwives. You can free birth. But behind the scenes, terrible things were happening.
I feel ashamed about this, but I didn't think that the deaths were bad until a year after I left.
Subscribe to the Guardian Investigates feed to get all the episodes of The Birth Keepers. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. Out now.
Hi, my name is Mitch Landrieu.
My name is Erin Haynes.
My name is Jennifer Palmieri, and we're hosting a new series called Long Play. The South is the new political epicenter of the country. Democrats are way on their heels in this region, but Republicans are going through their own reckoning in the South, too.
I mean, the South has always shaped American politics. We know that.
The stakes could not be higher, but to win the South, you have to understand it.
People in the South feel really misunderstood, left behind, put down on, and they want to explain that to somebody.
We're traveling across six southern states to explore the people, the issues, the assumptions that no longer hold, and what the rest of us are missing about a region that will shape the future of our politics and our country. From Left, Right, and Crooked Media, starting July 27th, watch Long Play series on YouTube at youtube.com/longplayseries or listen wherever you get your podcasts.